This is an iHeart podcast.
Happy anniversary. Well, not so much. We're going to look back on something tonight. We're going to talk to Sean Spicer. We're going to talk to Josh Hammer. We got Slater here. What a night of all-stars on I'm Right.
To unleash the full power of the federal government in this effort today, I am officially declaring a national emergency.
4 years ago. Almost made you wince a little bit, didn't it? Made me wince. I've watched it 10 times today, and even now, I was sitting there looking at it thinking, oh, gosh. 4 years ago today. Happy anniversary. Not so much, though. 4 years ago today, I don't know if I want to say everything changed in America, but many, many, many things were revealed about America. What I've said about COVID and this nation's response to COVID, both the institutional response, the response of the people, COVID was probably the most revealing time of my lifetime. I learned so much. We'll get into what I learned here in a moment. But remember this. Maybe when you're thinking back on lockdowns right now and all the insanity and the masks and the social distancing and the schools and all the craziness, maybe you're sitting there thinking to yourself, wow, the whole country lost its mind. Remember this. No, they didn't. There were many, many, many of us who were correct on this from the very beginning, how it should have been handled. We were ignored, but there were many of us. You remember? I got all your emails after I came on. This was March that year, and said this. The far-reaching consequences of what we're doing to try to stop the spread of this virus, maybe they're necessary, maybe they're not, but we are talking about massive, massive economic losses coming, and that's just the truth. These things we're doing, man, they are drastic measures. I hope they work, because we are going to be feeling this for not just, you know, the coming months, for years. Your kids are going to be fine. You're going to be fine. Be careful. Wash your hands. Calm down. You don't need to bury yourself in a bunker somewhere. I don't panic. And frankly, I don't make any adjustments. None. I spent the day at an arcade playing video games with my kids. Why? Because life is too daggone short. And all these people who are screaming at you to panic, and you have to, oh, everyone's going to die. Let's dial that down a notch. And also, people have to live their lives. You know, you were there. People didn't listen. People in charge. And here we are. So yes, many of us knew. But let's talk about a few things that I personally learned during COVID. Maybe you learned these things right along with me. We were here on I'm Right talking about it the entire time. One of the things that I learned was the American media is evil. Now, pause for a moment, pause. I know you already hate the media. You know I hate the media. We don't need any help to hate the media. For 2-3 decades, we've had bumper stickers on our cars that say, I don't believe the liberal media. But hold on a moment. There's a gigantic difference, at least there is for me, a change I made from knowing the media is biased. They lean left. Okay, they're all Democrats. All right. That's one way to look at it. And there's another way, which is, oh my gosh, these people are actually demons. These people are evil. And the day that switch flipped for me, and there could be a million examples of this, right? But the day I finally woke up and realized these people aren't bad, these people are evil. It was the day, you remember, there were a couple things had happened. Donald Trump was out there talking about hydroxychloroquine, that drug that could potentially treat COVID. And Joe Rogan was out there talking about ivermectin. Hey, I got COVID, I took ivermectin, I got better. Now, again, I didn't know, you didn't know, I'm not a doctor, whether any of those things would work, but if there is a deadly disease, which you say there's a deadly disease, and somebody, anybody says, hey, I found a way to treat it so people won't die, well, that's a good thing, right? You, as a human being, Just instinctively, you would think that's good. Hey, little Bobby has a horrible disease. He's going to die. Oh, hey, well, I have a pill. It might cure him. Well, you would at least be curious, if not excited, happy. Yes, yes, give Bobby the pill. Let's save him. But I want you to remember this always, 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 because all these people still bring you the news. The people who bring you the news hate you, and they hate you so much that when they were presented with a potential cure for a disease that was killing people, the American media, for political purposes, tried to deny it to you.
Ivermectin is something more often used to deworm horses.
Rogan telling his 13 million Instagram followers that he was treated with several drugs, and he included ivermectin on the list, a drug used for livestock.
Rogan said the word ivermectin. Yes, that's the deworming medicine made to kill parasites. And
so things are clearly bad, but they're being made even worse by people who have refused to take the vaccine and instead are swallowing horse paste.
Hydroxychloroquine does more bad than good for coronavirus patients.
In the study of 96,000 hospitalized coronavirus patients on six continents found that those who received that drug promoted by Donald Trump as a, quote, game changer in the fight against the virus had a significantly higher risk of death.
Taking hydroxychloroquine, despite mounting evidence that it doesn't work against COVID-19 and could, in fact, be harmful.
Those people wanted you to die because it could hurt Donald Trump politically. Those are the people who still bring America the news every single night. Let me just once again say, the American media is so evil, they cheered for you to die so Donald Trump would be hurt politically. I really woke up during COVID to the media. I woke up about something else. Doctors, scientists, the science, you know, especially academia, these places. We have always, it's human nature. There are some things about human nature. When you see certain things, especially as an American, you automatically assign a certain level of respect to that human being. One example might be a general or an officer. You see a military officer in his uniform, and he's got all these ribbons and medals on his chest. Automatically, you don't know anything about that person, but you automatically, his respect level in your mind goes up a few notches, doesn't it? Now, it may come back down, but automatically you see them and you have that level of respect. I have always been, and you have probably always also been that way, with doctors and scientists, right? I'm Dr. Nerd. I have 10 degrees from Harvard. And even though they say a lot of things and have always said a lot of things I disagree with, I at least thought that, hey, they're on our side, right? No one would go to college for 57 years and bury themselves in debt to practice medicine if they were just horrible communist apparatchiks. Surely nobody would do that. I mean, after all, he's a doctor, right? He's a doctor, of course. The doctor, he wants what's best for us. And then I remember America's science and medical community during COVID.
Vaccination not only prevents you from acquiring severe illness, but we now know with certainty that it largely prevents transmission.
My gut feeling is that these vaccines prevent infection and therefore will prevent transmission.
The vaccine not only prevents people from getting sick, it also prevents transmission of the virus from person to person.
We're vaccinating so very fast. Our data from the CDC today suggests, that vaccinated people do not carry the virus, don't get sick, and that it's not just in the clinical trials, but it's also in real world data.
I remember. And remember how much of the science you found out was bought during COVID, bought and paid for? I can't believe this video disappeared so quickly, or maybe that explains so much. But Project Veritas, remember they went and they got undercover video of a guy at the FDA. Remember the FDA, we rely on them. It's the Food and Drug Administration. They're going to tell us what food is safe, what medicines are safe, except they're all bought and paid for, too.
Biden wants to inoculate as many people as possible. So you're going to have to get an annual shot. I mean, it hasn't been formally announced yet because they don't want to, rile everyone up.
The drug companies, the food companies, the vaccine companies, they pay us hundreds of millions of dollars a year to hire and keep the reviewers to approve their products. If they can get every person required at an annual vaccine, that is a recurring return of money going into their company.
So how do you know it's already getting approved?
Well, they're not going to, I mean, just from everything I've heard, they're not going to not approve it.
Bought and paid for. And my final takeaway from COVID, and this may be hard to hear because it probably doesn't apply to you, but man, we are soft, the American people. We are soft. It wasn't just how compliant the American people were as a whole. No, not everybody, not of course, but how compliant we were. It's not just that. It's how many Americans still aren't angry and aren't nearly angry enough. I want you to watch a little montage, and I want you to know something about all the people you're going to see, all the politicians you're going to see in this montage, all these lockdown tyrants who violated your rights and violated your freedom. After all these politicians violated your rights and violated your freedom, the freedom-loving American people were so angry about that, they all went to the polls and reelected every single one of them.
I today am announcing that we are enacting a statewide indoor mask mandate unless a business has a vaccination mandate.
Any concern that you've gone too far in any way with the stay-at-home restrictions?
No. I know that what we have done, the vast majority of people in Michigan agree with and have done the right thing.
But we recognize now that just being vaccinated, fully vaccinated, is not enough with this new variant, and we believe it's important to extend this requirement to getting that third dose, to getting boosted.
Not one of them lost their job. Oh, it's Republicans, too. The Greg Abbotts of the world, the Mike DeWines of the world. 4 years ago today, all that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. That whole revealing episode made me very uncomfortable. All right, banning TikTok. Is that a good thing? Bad thing? Let's talk to Mike Slater about that in a moment. Before we talk to Slater, let's do this. Let's talk about the timeshare you think you're stuck in. You know that's a lie. You're not stuck in your timeshare. You are not. You think you are. And you think you are for good reason. It's not because you're stupid. You think you are because they lie. These timeshare companies lie all the time. Ah, sorry, you signed the contract. Sorry, pay your annual fees every year. But Lone Star Transfer is the company that has helped over 18,000 timeshare owners legally and permanently get out of their timeshare. You're just a phone call away from being free. I know the annual fees have doubled, special assessments. I know you can't even get in there now. I'm sorry, call back. Just get out. Call Lone Star Transfer. This is a family business. A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau. 844-310-2646, or you can go to LoneStarTransfer.com. Don't stay in a timeshare you don't even use anymore. All right? All right, we'll be back. The House of Representatives came together today in bipartisan fashion, and they passed a bill. No, it didn't ban TikTok. What essentially it does is it says TikTok can't be owned by the dirty Chi-Coms anymore, so they have to sell it off and be bought by some freedom-loving American company like Disney or something like that. Joining me now, my friend Mike Slater, host of Breitbart News Daily on the First TV, and you can also now watch that on Samsung TV Plus every morning, 7 and 9 a.m. Eastern Time. Okay, Mike, the House of Representatives, Democrats and Republicans, united today. Is it great? How should we feel about this?
Yeah, so red flag right there. Right, anytime we got uniting and bipartisanship, that's a potential problem. So we opened up the phones to this 2 days ago. Should we ban TikTok? And I was shocked. For 2 hours, every single phone call said no. Every single one. I'm for it. I'm for this ban. But I appreciated every sentiment of everyone who called in. I appreciated people saying this is a parental responsibility. I love that conservative instinct. I love people being aware of the slippery slope. I'm the king of the slippery slope, right? I appreciate everyone's deep distrust of these politicians who, you know, say they're doing X but will totally do Y. And I understand all the perils of it and all the arguments. But TikTok is uniquely bad because it's run by the Chinese communists. And I think that makes it fundamentally different than any of the other social medias, which are also really bad as well. We had a bunch of people called and they said, you know, Slater, we should care more about the Chinese owning land in America next to our military bases. Like, yeah, we should be very concerned about that. But also, I would like to divest the Chinese from our children's brains, which is what they have right now. We had a special forces guy call in and said he was in this this world of mind manipulation of the enemy. And he's like, oh, TikTok is just preparing the space. They're softening the assets. Jesse, I heard a lot of your COVID opening segment. Do we all remember the very beginning of COVID? It would have been February, and China put out all these videos of people falling on the ground and convulsing and having seizures. And they had all these videos of people with hazmat suits spraying everything down and shutting doors, like welding doors shut, freaking out the world to get the rest of the world and not Jesse Kelly's out there to freak out and shut everything down and destroy our country. They did that and they were able to push that all out there with all these different social medias. I see the cage tightening around us. And we're so just mind-numbingly addicted that when they pull that trigger and want to, they got us. They're already hooked. So the last caller said, wow, Slater, I'm amazed at how addicted even so many conservative adults are that they're defending TikTok. And I'm a little concerned about that, too.
Yeah, let's talk about addiction, Mike. People get addicted to things. It's part of life. They get addicted to bad things all the time, and this comes in very many forms. What is it about social media that is addictive? And it's not just kids today, right? People love to say that, but shoot, adults. I've seen older people. I've been in waiting rooms with nothing but senior citizens, and every single one of them just sitting there like this the whole time. What is it?
Yeah, so I have an addictive personality, so I think about this a lot. We're going to talk tomorrow on the show at 7 a.m. We're going to go into great detail. I'm grateful you asked. So there was a guy, Neil Postman, and he talked about how the book 1984 by George Orwell, everyone thinks that that's going to be our dystopian future. And his argument is, no. It's Aldous Huxley's Brave New World. 1984, Orwell's vision was that people will be controlled by inflicting pain on them. That's the big brother from above. But Brave New World, people are controlled by inflicting pleasure. And he has this great line that pleasure, people will come to love their oppression, and they will come to adore the technologies that have undone their capacities to think. We are so addicted to these things that we've lost our ability to think. I'll give you another COVID example. It's bread and circuses, right? That's what Juvenal 2,000 years ago talked about, how the people used to be honorable and they used to have like investment in their country and their nation, and they used to care about civics and society 2,000 years ago. But now all you need to give people is bread and circuses. And just because you mentioned COVID earlier in the show, one of the pivotal moments for me was like, wow, we are in big trouble here, was when Australia set up their quarantine camps. Do you remember this? They set up these trailers like at the airport or something. Mm-hmm. And they would literally take people from their homes and they would put them in these quarantine camps. And I was like, oh, the Aussies are gonna fight back, right? They're just like us. Like, no. And these people kept saying, well, it's okay, I guess. It's actually kind of fun because they give us free food and Netflix. That's bread and circuses. Like that's like literally it. You can rip me from my home, but give me Netflix and it's okay or even good. I'll leave you one last story, Jesse. So we're gonna talk more about this tomorrow, but I think a lot of conservatives know the story of how Ben Franklin wanted the seal of America to be Moses with the Red Sea parting and the Israelites away from Pharaoh, and like we're the second great exodus from tyranny, and we use that argument as like we used to be a Christian nation, and even Ben Franklin, like the secular founder, wanted that to be so he wanted that to be the seal of America. John Adams had a proposal. John Adams wanted the seal of America to be Hercules. He wanted this picture of Hercules with two women, and one of the women was offering him a difficult path up a mountain. And the other woman was offering him the perfect path of ease and comfort. And if he takes this path, and she's all seductive whenever she's drawn, she's all like half naked. And she says, come with me, you can have whatever you want. And you can steal the fruits of others' toil, and you can do it. You can have anything in your whole world, and everything will be so soft and easy for you. And he's like, what's your name? She says, oh, my name is Happiness. Some people call me Vice. And he chose the other woman. He chose the woman who was named Virtue, even though it required hiking up the mountain, right? That's what John Adams wanted the seal of America to be. He wanted us to be seen, he wanted us to look at Hercules knowing that we are choosing the difficult path of virtue. Social media is the easy path, right? It's the path of comfort and dopamine and the quick hit and the distraction. And it makes us weak. Social media makes us weak. Some listener sent me an email or a clip from Edward Gibbons' The Fall of the Roman Empire. And Edward Gibbons talks about how this long period of peace was a secret poison into the vitals of the empire, where the minds of men were gradually reduced to the same level and the fire of genius was extinguished and even the military spirit was evaporated. And I just think that's where we are today. Like, we don't have that, we're not thriving. We don't have that same level. We don't have that same inspiration. And even we're talking about letting illegal immigrants into our military. Like, the fact that we're even thinking about that says that we're in a really bad place in this country for a lot of reasons. And I think the dumbing down of America via social media is one of those reasons. At the very least, let's not have the communists in charge of it anymore.
Mike, you have a special coming out on Thursday. I wanted to ask you about this before we go. The War on Christianity. Talk about it.
Yeah, we focus mostly on this idea of Christian nationalism that a bunch of communists just made up the other day. And they do that very clearly, define it to put all Christians in it so that they can marginalize you and push you aside and call you a racist, xenophobe, and all the rest. So we talk about why they're doing it. We talk about what the Christian posture should be. And I know this is a favorite theme of yours as well, Jesse, that Christians need to wise up and step up and not care what other people say about them, but stand in God's word and say the truth and don't worry about what these Marxist communists say about you, whether the ones in China or the ones here as well. So that's what our special is this week.
About that. Go tune into it, Mike. As always, my man, I appreciate you. All right. We have election news out there, election-related news. There are some updates on various things. And, of course, we're going to bring in Sean Spicer to talk about that. Before we bring in Sean, you ever been pepper sprayed? I have. Don't worry, I didn't do anything wrong. It was part of training. Marine Corps, it's fine. But it feels like, this is the best way I can describe it to people. You take a lighter, cigarette lighter, it feels like somebody is holding a cigarette lighter to your eyes. That's what it feels like. You need to get a Byrna pistol launcher for your personal defense. It is non-lethal, all right? So I obviously have a lethal. I carry concealed, but I carry Byrna as well. It's a non-lethal option, and it shoots these pepper balls that come out super fast, or tear gas balls, or kinetic rounds, but there's non-lethal rounds, and they're brutal. Whap! You nail somebody with it, incapacitated for up to 40 minutes, legal in all 50 states, no background checks necessary. They mail one to your front door. Get a Byrna pistol launcher, and let me just give you a quick heads up. Buy some extra air cartridges when you do, because the practice is a blast. That comes with this big practice. You'll see. It's awesome. Byrna.com, B-Y-R-N-A, Byrna.com/Jesse gets you 10% off. We'll be back. Okay, we have good news and bad news and outstanding news. Good news is Ken Buck is leaving. Bad news is our majority, which was already that slim, just got even slimmer. Why is he even leaving now? The great news is, of course, the great Sean Spicer can be seen on Samsung TV Plus, 7 p.m. Eastern Time on the 1st, Monday through Friday. Sean, okay, Ken Buck is not someone I'm personally fond of. I'm not going to put that on you. I just cannot stand that sniveling little weasel. Why would you retire now exactly, Sean? Could you maybe walk me through that?
No, because I don't know why. His excuse was, I want to be more involved in the and I'm like, you're a sitting member of Congress. How? I mean, I think that's pretty involved. So I don't know why no one's pushing him. I have a couple guesses. I believe that he will end up as a pundit very quick at CNN or somewhere alike. And the reason I say that is he's done a couple interviews where he's been somewhat cagey about where he's going, but he's going to be involved and he wants to be able to have his voice heard during the cycle, which I, if you translate that, says I have a cable deal somewhere that I need to get to quickly.
See, that's very interesting you brought that up, Sean, because guess where Ken Buck went immediately after announcing this? Here was Ken Buck.
You already had announced that you were going to not run for re-election. Why leave now and leave a vacancy in an already very narrow majority for your party?
Yeah, because it's important to get in the mix of this election cycle and start talking about the issues that people recognize are such a problem right now.
Okay, Sean, so your theory obviously looks to be quite credible as he sits there on CNN, but I have a theory as well, and mine is totally unfounded and not grounded in any facts at all. Yeah, go ahead.
Before I forget it, and I'm that old that these days I forget things quickly, so I apologize because it's your show. But here's the point. Any normal journalist would have pushed back and said, you want to get in the mix? Aren't you in the mix right now? What does the mix mean? I mean, that's what journalists do. And yet she didn't do that, did she? Why? Well, maybe because the mix is right there on CNN.
You know what he looks like to me, Sean? He looks like somebody who's been compromised in some way. That's what he looks like to me. And I really genuinely mean that. His voting record has not traditionally been really bad in the House. He's been okay. And then he flipped a switch a few months ago. Christopher Wray sat in front of him, and he practically got to second base with Christopher Wray when he was supposed to be interrogating him. He's running to the media every other day talking about how Trump's evil and this impeachment stuff sucks. He turned into a water boy for the regime like that. And that doesn't just happen for no reason, Sean. I'm telling you right now, that guy's compromised in some way. I don't know what way.
Well, that's why my theory, I think, makes sense. Because if you know that you're going to CNN or somewhere where you have to show that you're technically a Republican but that hates Republicans, then here's my audition for you, right? I think that's what they need. They want you to show that you're on the team that they can. I mean, look, I've always thought these people who go over to CNN and MSNBC, you're being rented. You are providing them something that they need in the short term, which is to say, yes, technically we have Republicans on, but they all bash the Republican Party. They bash conservative America first principles. And they bash, obviously, the only way that you start that conversation is by saying how much you hate Donald Trump.
Sean, are we going to lose the House? Are we going to lose the Senate? What does the map look like for 2024? Everyone focuses on the top of the ticket. It happens. It's a presidential election year, but there are other fish to fry. What's our House and Senate odds look like?
So let's start with the good news. The good news is the Senate. We only need to pick up two seats there. The nice thing is, I mean, whether it's Ohio, the Sherrod Brown seat, we got a strong candidate. I think Bernie Moreno makes it out of the primary there. Very strongly supported by the Trump team, J.D. Vance, et cetera. Montana, great candidate there. Kevin Shee, who's just fantastic. So that's a great pickup potential for us. West Virginia, we already have. I mean, the Democrats pretty much don't have a candidate. I believe Governor Jim Justice will be the nominee there. That's a pickup. I mean, that's literally a guaranteed pickup where Joe Manchin has retired from. Then you've got seats in Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Nevada that are very much in play. So what I will tell you is I feel very good about having at least the Senate, which is a check against any potential problems it could have. Do I worry about the House? Absolutely. If I had to worry about one thing, it's maintaining a majority in the House. Here's the good thing, Jesse. I keep sprinkling in all the optimism for you. New York's Democrats could have really screwed the Republicans in redistricting. I mean, really taken it to the Mike Lawlers, the Nicole Malliotakis, Claudia Tenney, and Nick Lailota down in New York won. They didn't. They tinkered. Maybe picking up one seat, they could have picked up four or five. So here's what I'll tell you. I believe the House is the jump ball right now. There's about five or six seats that Republicans can pick up that are Biden seats. The Nancy Kaptur seat in Ohio is a great opportunity there. There's a lot of seats, 5, 6, 7, where Republicans can go on the ascent. But I do worry about seats in California. I still worry about a couple. There's a new seat down in Alabama, too, that was done because the court ordered it. So I am concerned. And I will tell you, you're asking the right question, because if Donald Trump, and it's not if, it's when he returns to the White House, I was there for the beginning. Having a Republican House that can pass your policies and a Republican Senate that can pass your nominees is crucial. If you look at the first 2 years versus the second 2 years, nominees were stopped in the Senate when he didn't have control, and he was impeached twice, and none of his policies got through because the House was controlled by Democrats. If you care about Donald Trump and the America First agenda, you need to care about maintaining the majority in both houses of Congress.
Sean, you are the man, brother. I appreciate you very much. All right. We have so much more. We have to get to legal stuff. What's happening with all this legal stuff? Fannie Willis, Josh Hammer joins us next. We're going to talk about that. Before he does, let's talk about protecting our money. We don't like talking about this now, but the truth is, look, you buy groceries, you buy power, you pay your power bill, you buy gas. Your dollar is getting weaker and weaker and weaker. We're all getting poorer, all of us. That's what inflation does. It gets us all. We're all getting poorer. And they're not stopping. That's the craziest thing about it. It's not just where we are. It's that no one has stopped the water from coming onto the boat yet, let alone started bailing it out. So we've got to take steps. Precious metals are the essential step, because precious metals have stood the test of time. The truth is, it doesn't matter what I tell you about gold or silver. I don't have to tell you anything. A history book tells you it. There's a reason people died for it for thousands of years. In the future, 1,000 years from now, it will have value, incredible value. The dollar will not. Oxford Gold will get some in your physical possession. They'll get it in your retirement account. Give them a call. 833-995-GOLD. 833-995-GOLD. We'll be back.
My team and I conducted a thorough, independent investigation. We identified evidence that the president willfully retained classified materials after the end of his vice presidency when he was a private citizen. This evidence included an audio-recorded conversation during which Mr. Biden told his ghostwriter that he had, quote, just found all the classified stuff downstairs, end quote. When Mr. Biden said this, he was a private citizen speaking to his ghostwriter in his private rental home in Virginia.
That sounds bad. I found the classified stuff. Joining me now, my buddy Josh Hammer, host of America on Trial with Josh Hammer. Josh, look, I'm not a legal mind like you. I went to community college, but that sounds really bad.
Yeah, look, Jesse, I mean, Joe Biden's conduct here was obviously disgraceful. And, you know, a lot of people are trying to compare what Donald Trump did to what Joe Biden did. And a lot of the mainstream media talking points, a lot of what the Democratic congressmen were saying there to Robert Hur in that testimony yesterday, is they're saying, oh, Donald Trump's actions were so, so much worse. And, you know, let's grant that there is some conduct alleged in Jack Smith's indictment, and it's just alleged conduct. He has a right to defend himself. But for example, he alleges that Trump ignored a grand jury subpoena. You can't do that, obviously. Having said that, there is some alleged conduct that looks kind of bad at first sight. Let's remember that Trump was the president of the United States at the time that he was involved in this classified documents tussle with the National Archives. If you were the president of the United States, you have the, quote, executive power that Article 2, Section 1, Clause 1 of the Constitution speaks, and you are allowed, you have inherent constitutional authority outside of any statutory or regulatory regime. You have inherent constitutional authority to make classification and declassification decisions. Joe Biden, at the time that he was hoarding classified documents, was not the commander in chief. He did not have the executive power. He was a senator from Delaware and then Barack Obama's vice president. That is a huge difference there, a massive, massive key distinction that I fear that many are eliding over. Now, look, I don't necessarily disagree, Jesse, with Robert Hur's bottom line conclusion not to recommend charges. And I think that he was right to do what he did in terms of talking about Joe Biden's mental, his mentality, his senile mindset. He didn't use the word senile, but all of that is legally relevant in order to convince a jury. Robert Hur is correct about that. I guess the point that I would make here is that when the media is comparing Biden and Trump side by side when it comes to their various classified documents scandals, they're really missing the forest for the trees. Did Trump act perfectly? Maybe, maybe not. Maybe we'll have a trial to kind of tease that out. But importantly, Jesse, he was the president of the United States when this happened. Joe Biden was not. That's a very important distinction.
You thought this exchange, you talk about this on your podcast, you thought this exchange between Daryl Issa and Hur was interesting. Here it was.
I'm going to presume that you would never prosecute someone you thought was outright innocent.
Correct.
In this case, did you reach a conclusion that this man was outright innocent?
That conclusion is not reflected in my report, sir.
You did not reach an idea that he had committed no wrong. You reached a conclusion that you would not prevail at trial and therefore did not take it forward. Is that correct?
Correct, Congressman.
Okay, Josh, now for the average American who does not know the law the way you know the law, what you just said and what that exchange just said has them pulling their hair out and ready to jump off a bridge. What does any of that mean? He committed a crime. You just said he committed a crime, but the guy who's pretending to be president is too mentally broken to stand trial? That's a legitimate thing?
So, look, Jesse, I'm not a prosecutor. I've never been a prosecutor. But based on conversations with prosecutors, they do agree that it is a curious and unusual thing to put into a prosecutorial report. But that was his decision. That was his decision to say that based on what he saw from Joe Biden, based on the fact that Joe Biden was talking about how he couldn't remember when Bo Biden died without any prompting, how he was talking about how he couldn't remember when he was vice president, when Trump won the election, was it November 2017? He saw someone who was just totally out to lunch and who was essentially unfit to stand trial. And I think that he was within his rights to offer that conclusion. Now, there's a few other things to bear in mind here. One, Jesse, and this is kind of the key point that I actually can't figure out about this entire Robert Hur special counsel investigation going back over a year now. It is longstanding Department of Justice policy going all the way back to the Richard Nixon administration. There's a 1973 memo that Richard Nixon's Office of Legal Counsel, which are basically the highfalutin lawyers within the White House counsel's office, they issued a memo in kind of the context of the whole Watergate scandal that a sitting president cannot be indicted as a constitutional matter for a crime. That conclusion was reiterated in a 2000 memo from the Bill Clinton Office of Legal Counsel, and it remains good law, good Department of Justice policy to this day. I think that policy happens to be constitutionally correct. I guess one question that I have, Jesse, I've never gotten a straight answer on this, is if you know that you're not going to actually indict him, then why do this in the first place? And the only answer that I have is because Democrats simultaneously with Jack Smith's prosecution of Trump in D.C. are actually trying to establish the precedent of then prosecuting a president after he is president for the actions he took while he was president. So if they are successful in establishing that precedent in D.C., then maybe you can prosecute Joe Biden for after this. But I haven't been able to figure that one out here as well. In any event, Jesse, I think that Robert Hur did an overall pretty good job yesterday, I do.
All right, let's move on to what's happening tomorrow. There's a huge hearing in the Trump classified documents case. The rest of us can't follow along with all this stuff, Josh. That's the point of your podcast. What's happening?
Yeah, big hearing in Judge Aileen Cannon's courtroom in Fort Pierce, Florida tomorrow. So this is Trump's classified documents case. It is the lesser discussed of Donald Trump's two federal prosecutions. Most people talk about Jack Smith's probe in D.C., and there's going to be a huge hearing at the Supreme Court in about a month and a half when it comes to the immunity question there in the D.C. probe. Does Trump have immunity for what we just discussed because he was president? But here tomorrow, we're talking about the classified documents case, and basically Trump's lawyers are trying to dismiss this indictment. They're saying that the statute that Jack Smith is talking about, which is a World War I era statute called the Espionage Act. Jesse, this is a statute that prosecutors typically invoke when it comes to people like Bradley, Chelsea Manning, whatever we're calling him or her, folks like Jack Teixeira, the Air Force Discord leaker. It is not a pretty statute. So the fact that Jack Smith went there to try to prosecute a former president is absolutely absurd, totally overshooting the mark. And Trump's lawyers are arguing that this invocation of the Espionage Act is unconstitutionally void for vagueness. But more interestingly, what they're doing in this hearing in Judge Cannon's courtroom tomorrow, they're making an argument that myself, Mike Davis, and some other lawyers have made, which is that we think that the actual relevant law to govern the relations when it comes to classified documents between a president and the National Archives is a civil statute from the late 70s, early 80s called the Presidential Records Act, which is a civil, not a criminal statute. Many of us have said that that is actually the statute that should govern this conduct. And if Judge Cannon actually accepts that, that really would nullify, if not throw out, much of Jack Smith's prosecution. So as a legal nerd, Jesse, I'm very excited to finally see this argument get the light of day that I think that it has deserved for a long time, at least since that August 2022 pre-dawn FBI raid at Mar-a-Lago. And hopefully Judge Cannon reaches a conclusion. In any event, the Florida trial, Jesse, is looking pretty good for Trump because the timeline, it's very, very unlikely to reach a verdict prior to November. And even if they do reach a verdict prior to November, it's a very politically mixed juror pool there in the Fort Pierce, Florida area. I think Trump overall, for all these reasons, is looking pretty good in the Florida prosecution.
Okay, wrap this one up for us then, Josh. What happened in the Fannie Willis trial today? Everyone's looking at the headlines. A bunch of charges were thrown out. Is Trump scot-free? Doesn't have to worry about Georgia anymore?
He's not off the hook yet. So, you know, there are a lot of counts in Georgia. I think it was roughly 30 to 40 counts specifically against Donald Trump in the state of Georgia. They're prosecuting him there under the state's RICO statute. RICO at a federal level when it comes to the U.S. Congress was it's an anti-racketeering statute. It was essentially developed by Congress in the middle of the 20th century when it comes to Congress's attempts to crack down on La Cosa Nostra, on organized crime and the mafia. So that's literally the statute or the Georgia equivalent of that statute that they are invoking to prosecute Trump and his alleged co-conspirators. So there's a lot of counts there. What happened today was Judge Scott McAfee, who's supposed to issue his ruling probably this week, probably Thursday or Friday, when it comes to whether or not Fannie Willis and Nathan Wade are disqualified. Today, he threw out six of the counts. But again, it's six out of 30, 40, whatever the precise exact number is. So Trump's not clear yet. The counts today that they threw out were basically solicitation of a public official to violate the oath. So Fannie here was prosecuting Trump and some others for allegedly soliciting Brad Raffensperger, the Secretary of State of Georgia, to violate his oath when it came to that infamous phone call on January 3rd, 2021 to quote unquote find more votes in Georgia. McAfee basically says there's just not enough here. So these counts are thrown out, but unfortunately Trump's not off the hook in Georgia quite yet.
Josh, thank you, my man. All right, we're gonna lighten the mood. Before we do that, did you enjoy that? You know, Josh's podcast, podcasts of all my shows, everything is available on thefirsttv.com/podcast. So me, Josh, all of it, just go there and enjoy, all right? All right, we have Light in the Mood next. All right, let's lighten the mood. I have told you these stories before, so I'm going to tell you again real quick before we introduce this video. It's very common for people, as they get older, to dog on the next generation. Don't think that you're unique if you do this. Every generation has always done this. Oh, kids today, everybody has always said that, right? And I've never liked that. Why? Because every generation has a bunch of turds and a bunch of great people in it. There's a mix. It's not as if there's the generational thing. But understandably, older Americans today think younger Americans are left wing and they're all crazy. And I'm here to tell you this, something I didn't realize, something I'm realizing more and more. I have two sons, 13 and 15, right? So they always are hanging out with their buddies, playing and things like that. So I talk to their friends. Their friends talk to me. You can't imagine how hardcore some kids today are. There is going to be a reaction to all this insanity from our side. I'm telling you, the generation coming, they're going to make me look pillow soft. I'm telling you. See this 17-year-old flying Old Glory, baby?
Wherever 17-year-old Cameron Blazek goes, so does Old Glory.
The flag itself represents this country, this beautiful country that we live in.
He fastened the flag to his truck this summer.
It's very strongly secured in there. I mean, you can't pull that out if you tried.
It abides by the U.S. flag code.
I got pulled aside by my counselor and vice principal, and they told me, hey, you got to remove the flag off the back of your truck. And I kind of looked at him, and I said, no. I said, it's not going to happen. I said, I can't.
Cameron held the line.
Read through East Central's 2023-2024 handbook, and the word flag wasn't even mentioned in the parking lot or driving section. The only section it's mentioned in is the flag twirling section.
Boy.
The next day at school, others showed up with flags of their own.
There was a huge support group there that believed and stood for the same thing that I did, and I was kind of shocked by that.
That's when the principal sent a letter to parents Friday to, quote, address recent concerns and confusions, writing, I am pleased to inform you that we are allowing the display of the U.S. flag by students in the parking lot.
I think everybody gets offended over something that doesn't mean what everybody says it does. This flag represents our country and the people who died for it and fought for it, and I respect that with my whole heart.
Kids are going to be all right. I'll see you tomorrow.
This is an iHeart podcast.